This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. With us is poet Lauren Camp, who came from Santa Fe, and she has a story to tell, and she's going to tell it to you in poetry. Here's her opening poem.
A Door in the Evening. This house that filled us with 13 varieties of rice, brown boiled eggs, creases of language. There was not a single sentence that was ordinary. Tender lamb and copper pots, a banquet every week, and we hovered. The house was brick, back door, side door, each of the reasons, the clutter of years. I used to live here. I live here. The beginning of forgetting comes quickly.
The voice of Lauren Camp. We're at the Library of Congress, but we're on location today. This book won the Dorset Prize, and I want you to tell us what the book's about.
The book is basically about my father's childhood in Baghdad, Iraq. His family had been there for generations, a Jewish family. My father wouldn't tell me any of his story, and it never occurred to me to be even curious about it for years and years and years. And so it wasn't until he told me he lived in Batawin, and I must have, I had no idea where that was or what that was, and I went to a map of Baghdad from the mid-1930s, early 40s, and tried to figure out where it was. And when I found it, it suddenly became real. His childhood became real for me.
This book is about his being inarticulate in some ways about his past, and it's almost as if you're trying to elicit history from a very reluctant storyteller. But we're going to go through the book and find out who these people are. I think right away, tell us who you believe the predominant characters are in this book.
My father and his mother. And then perhaps secondary, some of his extended relatives.
I find it very interesting that you are not in the middle of the landscape.
Yeah, when you asked what the book is about, it is also about me and how I grew up with his customs and rituals. And yet, it's not about me exactly.
That is the masterful part of it, because we get information about you, but it is truly they're kind of a mystified relationship. So you have very strong characters in this book. And then on the periphery, we see your childhood. Read us a poem.
If he missed his country. If he missed his country, her father never said. He paid attention to the plucks of his body. He turned off the music, the slanting wail of the oud. What he could hear was what he would be, husband and father in the city of experience, in a land without stain, without shadow, without eyes.
Why did he come?
I had no idea for the longest time until I wrote this book. He came. All he would tell his children was the date he came to the U.S.
Why the secrecy?
I couldn't have answered you because, I mean, now I know that it was an uncomfortable situation for the Jews. But it didn't occur to me to ask. It was an invisible, unspoken boundary beyond which you don't cross. I wouldn't even say he was inarticulate about it. It was like an erasure. It was like an absolute stoppage of, there's no information before this. This is the date I arrived in the U.S., and this is when life began.
But you'll never know what triggered the journey. There's not an incident. There's not an event.
There is an incident that I write about in the book briefly called the Farhud, which is translates to the dispossession. And it happened June 1st and 2nd, 1941. And it was like Kristallnacht pogrom against the Jews and raping and killing and ruining of businesses, my father would have been not quite six. So was that the beginning of the... It's shocking.
So are you telling me that Baghdad was a harmonious world at some point where Jews and Arabs lived together?
Yes,
is that right?
That is correct.
And then suddenly there was this vision. There was this... Something happened where a divisiveness happened. And then all of a sudden the Jews were expunged?
It wasn't quite so suddenly. Great Britain became a nation state. I can't remember the year, 1932 maybe. And they put boundaries on the country. And that created divisions in some ways because it pulled people closer together than they really needed to be. It was a harmonious society for a very long time. And the Jews were integral to every part of the culture of the community. And then there was the effect of Nazi Germany reaching there. And so with World War II coming in, things started to heat up. But of course, I didn't know any of this.
Oh, this is a book that is so important because it, in addition to this information, we get human sensibilities. So what you provide for us is this scenario, this drama, this historicity, but it's seen through the record of human feelings. And so please give us some more. This is Lauren Camp. She's here from Santa Fe. I'm Grace Cavalieri.
Why Dad Doesn't Pay Attention to Iraq Anymore. You can all stop asking about the Abu Ghraib torture and how he felt when the pictures were published of men in long hoods. He was traveling the white rim of traffic from New York to the city of brotherly love, stopping for donuts, cream-filled. When Hussein's statue fell, he was up in his condo, organizing pencils, most with erasers, his radio tuned to Beethoven's Sixth or some college football. Collateral damage, snipers, missiles, vessels, and hostile attention, he's not watching. His black shadows are inverted, his horizons a gold minaret, the zip and clatter of dust, a river branched under a bridge, then cut from the muscle of land. He sees the circumference of dates, unsaid words pile in dunes. All he wanted was some portion of yes and stay. Those phrases no one could pack. The tick talks backward. His single truth was to stop reading. Letters became drifts. The longest griefs are those we never look at, in terrible gutters and columns of newsprint. Yes, in war stories, everyone dies in the end.
This is really a very powerful book. What was your relationship with your father?
My relationship with my father continues. It was complicated. I love him tremendously, and he has always been a very difficult, irrational, difficult person.
He's going to hear this program. I want you to know that. But he's also a fabulous person. And what you've done is brought a portrait to life that will never die. You really have given him immortality.
Thank you. And that's really important to me, that since I had to imagine a lot of the childhood, since he wouldn't tell me, and the research materials weren't there, period, but they also weren't there for my father's story specifically. And so I've had to create, to the best of my ability, what I think would have been accurate.
Well, the father figure in literature is a very important figure through time, and even with contemporary poetry, more with a male poet, I find. But Natasha Trethewey, of course, her work is predominantly about her father, and I find this to be equal to that in intensity. But let's hear some more poems. This is Lauren Camp. She's come to us from New Mexico, and it is the Library of Congress on location. I'm Grace Cavalieri.
I think I'll read you two poems about being in the kitchen. The first one is for my grandmother, Mary Murad Mokamal, and it's called A Woman of Valor. Her grandmother never looked up from her apron of cooking, never spoke of the sifting of self, the thick shape of the kibbeh, or the blood juice of beets in her palm. She just set down the plates and retreated as her family ate, relentless and satisfied, the slow simmered foundation of food. An elaborate matrix of tastes surrounded the lamb's tongue braised in tomato, the liver on crackers, the cleft of crushed cumin in a crust of butter-drenched rice. When we thanked her, she shrugged in the temple of exposure and nodded ruffled into the carpet. Where we sat, under the wide eye of evening, its dimples and smother, her tender thin voice spiced the room. She backed into the kitchen, past steps to the basement and pantry, toward pan piles and oils, the last of the kaka everyone loved, into the simple room and its burble of dishwater, where she inhaled every strong scent of everything seared, sizzled, stewed, and when she looked up through ordered panes of the window over the sink, what she saw was a dull shade of self in a small shore of stars.
Oh, that is magnificent. What a fabulous piece of writing.
It feels important to credit my grandmother because, and I want to read you a follow-up poem to this, because in thinking about it, we didn't acknowledge her near as much as she deserved. She wanted, or her role was to be in the background. And yet, I'll read you this poem so you can see how important that one poem that I just read you was to her identity. This is called Kitchen. My mother was able with instruction, but my grandmother buried her hands in each singing dish. She never gave recipes, just mysteries. No one could imagine more than tomatoes, pistachio seeds, the papery membrane of garlic, the capture of sweet, the rigorous heat, a chicken bleeding. Describe what you do. She turned her back. On the table, pots and dishcloths, cumin. She left Iraq and shaped it in her palms.
This is what Robert Haas calls the composition of place, where food becomes the locus. Mm-hmm. And you have created, through your sensuality, such a powerful sense of her personality by what she cooks.
That's right.
The bloody chicken. You know, she certainly lives. Why is your mother missing in this poem, in this book?
Probably because my entire second book was really devoted to my mother. And this was my father's story. And so she didn't figure into it in terms of his acculturation.
That makes sense. And I just was interested in the fact that she had to use recipes.
She always did, yeah. And of course, my grandmother, being that type of cook, never did. It was a pinch of this or an amount of this.
But that says so much, mm-hmm, culturally. Mm-hmm. Was your mother American?
Yes.
And so your father was Iraqi Jew.
Right.
From Baghdad.
From Baghdad.
Your mother was an American-American?
She was from Oklahoma.
That's as American as you can get.
And she was Jewish.
And that helps.
And her family, you'd think, it might have helped. And her family originally went back to Lithuania.
Let's hear some more from Lauren Camp in this really significant book of our time.
So one of the things I had to imagine was, I had to imagine a lot of things, but one of the things I chose to imagine was my father's first landing in New York. He was 15, had just turned 15, and this is what I imagine it was like. First view of America. The plane slid down on a land divided, the unnatural floor of earth. Uncle met him, his footsteps stamped on Idlewild tile. They drove through a city affixed to the sky where buildings rose higher than 100 Sejra Bitamur. Dad's eyes must have extended. It was October, a sheet of leaves. The pigment of fire flittered on glass. His new world began in a hollow car. And on Maple Avenue, his mother offered a whole fish on a plate in curdled oil. He was suddenly tired. He was thrown to it, this land, soft and uncertain. Chicken bones and onion skins in a pot on a stove. In Baghdad, he left a single wrinkle in his room, but packed his accent and passport. He dressed for a journey, drank a cup of belief in the airport, moved through doorways. In 1941, one uncle was murdered. The family waited 9 years, then boarded a plane.
Was the uncle murdered for having been a Jew?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I've never been able to get too much information on that.
Tell us about the way you create pulsation on the page, in that some pages are prose poems, some are fragments, but you have the courage to not say too much and to just know what shape you should take. How do you do that?
I wish it were that easy. I believe in revision with all of my heart.
You would never know that. This looks like God just blessed the page. It looks so easy.
But, you know, and a lot of it really is trying to figure out the shape. I think in a way it's almost like an accordion, like you blow air into it and see, can the lines be long? Can the poem sustain for a page or two pages? Can this stand on its own with a single line? There's a poem in the book that is a single line.
Yes.
A lot of the poems about my father's childhood have no title.
That was risky.
It seemed...
Well, it seemed as if you had confidence in yourself, and it seemed as if the preceding poem and this other poem that followed it was sustaining enough.
Thank you. I think I'm glad that comes through, because I think it was about carrying the reader on a journey and not stopping them at every step, at every page.
I felt that. Talk about sensuality.
You've got it to give. And if you've got it, you might as well give it, huh?
It's in the food.
It's in the food.
It's in the wrinkles. It's in the sand in his hands. Talk about senses and touches and sounds.
A huge part, because I was missing so much actual information and body feelings about my father. I couldn't be in my father's body in Baghdad in between 1935 and 1950. I couldn't approximate his experience in a place halfway around the world at a time that will never get back for that culture. And further, in a gender that, you know, he was the first male. It's a very different thing. I haven't been able to go there. And so I had to access the senses through everything I had, which meant spices. It meant music. I wrote a lot of the poems about my father's childhood to the sound of the oud, for example, so I could make sure I'd get those long, flowing, kind of wailing lines. And that's part of why those poems are longer. And so that helped me shape a culture that I've only been able to grab at through fragments.
Well, give us some more of your culture, Lauren Camp.
The boy and his brothers were driven to school through beams of the sun, through the roaming hearts of lamb and goat, through the feast of the desert. The city was small, and this comforted him. Men spoke in old words, silted and portly with matter, in silver coins, in the thin paper of dinar. His mother lit candles. The boy listened to Arabs, to Muslims and Jews, to voices cascading through anise and ginger. Light squabbles settled over the river.
Are you a good cook?
I think so.
Yeah, you'd have to be. Tell us something about what you think identity means, because I asked another woman recently in an interview for a magazine, and she said, I think identity is just what people see. It's what you perform in public, which I thought was a very different take from what I believe it is. What is identity? What is your identity?
having worked on this book, I think I'd have to say that identity, I have learned that identity is sometimes exactly the opposite of what that woman said. My father's identity is the part that other people can't see, I think. He's been in this country for more than 65 years, mm-hmm. and yet who he is really who he tried to leave behind.
Oh, that is beautifully said, and I don't think you've written that line.
No, I haven't.
That's a beautiful.
It's a good thing you captured it.
Truly, that is. And he kept his accent, you said.
You want to hear a little story about his accent? At one point when I was a teenager, a young teenager, I asked my mother for something, and she said, call Dad at the office. He worked on Wall Street. And I called him, and I got the answering machine, and I slammed down the phone. And she said, what happened? I said, it was a man with an accent. And she said, it was Dad. And I said, no, it was someone else. It was someone with an accent. That's the little story, because I never heard my father's accent.
Do you mean you only identified it then, or he had a way of concealing it?
No, I mean, it was so familiar to me that he didn't conceal it.
Oh, you realized it was an accent.
It was the first time I could hear it from afar, sort of maybe disembodied from him.
That's a good point.
So he still has his accent.
But that isn't enough in your book either. We have to have a sequel.
Right.
And another poem right now from Lauren
and
Kamm.
And another poem.
And the book is 100 Hungers from Tupelo Press, and it's an award-winning book.
So some of the poems in the book are about my understanding of what it's like to come from another place and try to suppress it or try to just begin again and how impossible that is. And so there are a lot of poems that intersect the current, the contemporary, with the past, and how identity is formed from the collection of the two, even if you're trying to separate them. So here's a poem called Velvet. In synagogue, in the suburbs, we fill with song and book after book, and the tigress rises up and makes a blessing. We are in our seats, running our hands on the velvet beside us. Our mouths are moving, our eyes are down. There is one story and one story, and we repeat it each week. This story is true and foolish. Words huddle back to front with occasional laments and long echo. We are waiting to learn about today, tomorrow, why we must suffer. I am wearing a white dress, my father a tie. Mm. Even at this moment, the river insists on flowing. I smell the perfume of the desert. Old men advance with their widening language, pushing carts, selling words without farewell, without salt, without the flesh of worry. Silver birds quiver in the sun. Then I'm not at the water. The sermon has ended. There are round tables of bread on old platters. My father laughs, his cheeks like globes. A day of rest. All day we are lucky.
That could be a picture from Bruegel. That
Ooh,
is such
nice.
A visual. And that's what you have, the ability to transform things into multidimensional experiences. It's really an extraordinary book. I read a lot of them.
I bet you do.
About one a day, actually. And this is something no other book has, truly. We can't get enough of it.
So maybe I'll read you the poem that begins the book. And in doing that, I just want to say how very hard it was to structure the book because I was missing so much information that I couldn't do it in any sort of chronological, linear way. And so I ended up sort of reordering and reordering and reordering, trying to make sense of how to tell the story. And what I finally decided on that worked, or I felt like it worked, was cycling through the story repeatedly. So it's in, the book is in five sections where some information new is added, some new perspectives are added, some new voices are added, and others drop away. And it keeps cycling through in different ways. Mm. And there's this poem that begins the whole book before any of those sections. It's called Without Spectacle or Fading. What time said first? The sky is holy. Nonetheless, what time did first was build a land of hawk and buzzard, rounded contours, huddled sage. Among the wisdoms, to name it desert, its own world of dust, the range of cumulus in sudden chafe and copper sun, the silver-threaded river. Then to sanctify with rightful foods and all its people who should want for nothing, what we discover, wind drift, the heartbreak of their fleeing. Expedition and Terrain. Her grandmother lost the last of her mind on a slow bus picking over soggy roads. The girl saw her half-closed eyes, how she was all the time repeated by Alzheimer's. A single word, the gauzy trip of description, each forgotten thread of herself stitched into a chorus of childhood liturgy, a banner of Arabic. And the small of her breathing on the blank bank around recall, facts falling from the old page of her face, her language and courage, detail by detail, decaying. Ma'a salama, goodbye. If the drape of a mind becomes pleats, one thought covers another until the sum of memory is folded inside.
And now I would like you to read a closing poem.
Okay. I want to read one of the poems about my father's young childhood. It's a very short poem. A huge part of the importance of this book was writing about peaceful times in Iraq. And because we don't see that very often. The news shows us only the war and the devastation. And in writing about this, I was able to sort of memorialize some of the beauty of the time. So this is an untitled poem. A prince of the city, he moved through the sky, through the wide eye of sun and the thrust of tough voices to the pigment of river, where he sat with his cousins, eating fish and looking over the season of green, the stone bridge, the bone-white boats, and the long, voluble course of the water.
Pictures in an exhibition. Each poem a picture. Lauren Camp, the voice of Lauren Camp. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation, with additional support from Friends of Poetry, Candace Katz, Hiram LaRue, and Avi Day Shoshani. I'm Grace Cavalieri.